Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, participants will be on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion. If at that time you'd like to ask a question, press star one. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And now I'd like to turn the call over to your host today, to Ms. Karen Clayton. Ma'am, you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you. Thank you all for joining us this morning. I'd like to welcome you to NOAA's annual stakeholder budget briefing. I'm NOAA's Director of Communications. This briefing will be an opportunity for you to hear more details on our FY17 budget and what that request means for NOAA. As our stakeholders, you play a very important role in shaping the products and services we provide and help us in establishing our priorities and addressing national needs. I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce Dr. Catherine Sullivan, NOAA Administrator and Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere. She is joined by representatives from all of our line offices as well as folks from our budget office. For those of you on the phone, you can follow along with our PowerPoint presentation by either clicking on the link in the email we sent yesterday or by visiting bit.ly/OOA2017. And with that, I'll kick it over to Dr. Sullivan.
Thank you, and let me add my thanks to everyone who's on the line joining us today. If you've got the PowerPoint chart up, you can go directly to page 2. What we'd like to do, as we commonly do in this briefing, is just remind you of the context and the philosophy, the logic, if you will, that underlies the initiatives and the approach we're taking here with the budget. Then highlight a number of the initiatives that are in this budget, requests that we've made for additional funding from the Congress. And at the very back end, as we always do, we've got a summary list of those areas where there are some reductions proposed and a summary table of budget and trends by line office function over the last several years. So that's what we will do. Turning to page 3, what you will see in this submission is that we remain very tight, sharply focused and in a disciplined way on the four priorities that we've been working on as an agency over the last several years, and you see them here as a reminder. Providing information and services to help communities become more resilient. I want to emphasize again what we mean by that and where we apply that when we talk about resilience in NOAA. We always mean societal, economic, and ecological resilience. Those are three dimensions of the same thing. And we have learned through our work and practice in NOAA that one really cannot have resilience if you do not have all three. So whether it's in weather-related hazards or fisheries or ocean health, our focus on resilience is that resilient capacity to withstand a blow or a change and restore or regain function, but it is along all three of those axes always. And then given our mission mandates and responsibilities, we look to provide this information and services to communities principally in three domains, with respect to water resources, with respect to coastal zones, coastal resilience, both physical and biological, and with respect to the ocean itself. Second priority is evolve the National Weather Service. Third, invest in observational infrastructure. We see ourselves as being principally in the environmental intelligence business. That's the root of what we do, what we deliver to communities, what we generate internally as well for our work in restoration or protected species or fisheries management. And we have to continue to invest in sustaining a robust array of observations because there is no such thing as viable, useful environmental intelligence unless you're keeping your fingers on the pulse of the planet in a very rich and robust way. And then finally, our inward-focused priority to make sure we're improving those things within NOAA itself that drive us forward to achieve organizational excellence. We've made some genuine and significant and, I believe, valuable progress on each of these priorities over the last several years, and what you'll see in the request that we're making here is a strategy to both stabilize, deepen, and strengthen key advances we've made so far, and in just a couple of areas to bring into play new dimensions that are driven either by evolving societal needs or issues within NOAA itself that, excuse me, that warrant some special attention. So that is how we remain aligned with this budget, and on slide four, just to point out again that these priorities link very well into and align very well with the priorities that we're working on with Secretary Pritzker at the department level. You've all been around Washington quite a lot, as have I, and we all know sometimes these alignments with higher levels of an organization are a bit artificial. Some schema has been proposed, and everyone makes their rhetoric line up, but there's not much more substantive to it. I want to say in this case, that is not the case. There is a substantive and thoughtful and genuine alignment here that has been paying dividends in both directions, really advancing priorities that the department cares about, improving tie points that we have with other bureaus in the department in some very productive ways, applying our Coastal Zone information resources to census, for example, to provide better information products to partners like FEMA. So this has been a real and productive engagement with the Secretary and her team that has benefited both directions quite substantially. Let me talk a little bit about some of those advances and progress we've made over the last several years. Communities all around our country are struggling with or trying to plan and get ahead of challenges that they face because of the effects of extreme climate and weather-related events and changing ocean conditions. Funding we've received from Congress in prior years has enabled us to move forward on a number of significant fronts in this regard. The image in the upper left shows you a dot plot of key project areas where we have worked to help restore Gulf of Mexico ecosystems in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon spill. I want to highlight also, although we don't have a graphic for it, the really remarkable progress we've made, both ending overfishing and rebuilding U.S. fish stocks. That's really sound testament to the viability and the effectiveness of the Magnuson-Stevens Act and to the support we've had from partners and constituents and the Congress over the years to implement the management measures and the accountability measures called for under that law. We've expanded two national marine sanctuaries over the past year. This is not done by NOAA edict or by fiat. This is the result of communities coming to us, seeing the kind of benefit they gain from having sanctuary offshore in terms of the biology and health of the ocean, in terms of tourism and appeal of their area, and asking that the sanctuary be expanded. The graphic in the upper right shows our harmful algal blooms for Western Lake Erie. We've brought these into operation now in both the Great Lakes and the Gulf of Mexico. We're seeing toxic blooms off virtually every stretch of the U.S. coastline these days. So it's important that we continue to move forward and extend this product coverage to all those communities that are potentially affected. In the blooms that are shown in this graphic here, our forecasts and alerts, combination of satellite and in-situ data, were able to give park managers along from the municipalities in the Western Erie Shore 3 to 4 days advance warning so they could shut their intakes and protect their citizens from potentially toxic water. Beach managers, fishermen in the lakes also pay attention to those forecasts to make sure they stay healthy and safe. So our 17 budget focuses on each of these areas and others in our resilience priority and works to maintain and expand on these successes. There's a particular focus that I'll talk about a little bit in just a moment about water. And NOAA is the only federal agency charged with water prediction and water warning, flood warning, surge warning responsibilities. So we have a unique niche and can play a unique and important role, a pivotal role, frankly, in equipping the nation to respond to and address the various water challenges that we face. And on slide six, you see several of these, whether it's nuisance flooding affecting communities along many of our shores, Norfolk, Virginia, and the Hampton Roads area comes to mind, happening in many, many, many places, or whether it's providing city planners and emergency managers with advanced GIS-based tools like the Coastal Flood Mapper you see on the right so they can appreciate what level of nuisance flooding or storm surge poses what degree of hazard to their community, or whether it's the farmers and ranchers and municipalities out in the western states that are dealing now with the fourth year of very protracted drought. We've begun a national conversation related to water prediction that will continue throughout this year, the result of which we intend to be an integrated path forward for NOAA and our sister agencies to really develop the core underlying predictive capabilities across all water resources and water-related phenomena that will help us better manage our nation's water resources and better protect our communities from the challenges of too much or too little or water of the wrong quality or water in the wrong place, like when the river decides to store some water on a floodplain or Mother Nature decides to send the ocean inland onto shores. We will anchor this partnership and the coalitions that we're going to gather around it at our National Water Center down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which we envision to be a hub, an incubator, and an accelerator of scientific work and the applications that flow from that. Let me dive a little further into what we propose to do in the water arena based on requests we've made in the 17th budget. If you go to slide 7, you'll see an array of red triangles scattered across the contiguous United States and then a blue backdrop behind that. The red triangles are the 4,000 discrete specific locations, the river gauge locations basically, at which NOAA today makes river and stream and flood forecasts. If you expanded this map to look at any of the communities where you all live, you might find in some cases that one of those red triangles is conveniently close to a downtown or a significant population area or critical infrastructure like hospitals or schools. But with only 4,000 points to cover the entire United States, you can imagine it's going to be more often the case that the geography of particular concern from a hazards point of view is going to be some miles away from where that forecast points. That leaves our communities, our citizens, our emergency managers with the challenge of trying to guesstimate or interpolate or just make a wild grab at what that stream gauge X miles away portends for what's going to happen in their downtown or to their water treatment facility. The model advances that we propose to implement in FY17, if we receive the requested funds, will change that equation substantially. The 4,000 red triangles you see on this map will become 2.7 million specific forecast points. It will be almost like throwing a mesh down over the country. This will bring that flood and river flow information down to street and community level. This will be 700 times denser and enable updates that are 20 times more frequent than what we can do today. It will translate in tangible terms to 15-hour to 30-day flood outlook, the daily soil moisture map, a plethora of specific information products that will improve everything from local emergency management to our drought forecast. So that's this is truly a cross NOAA initiative. This will involve data from our NESDES satellites. It will involve the National Ocean Service stitching together inundation and tide and surge forecasts in the coastal zones, certainly involve the National Weather Service and our river forecast centers. But it's going to create an entirely new generation of information products that farmers and ranchers, water managers, the energy sector, and individuals can use for planning on scales from days out to seasons. All of this with the aim of maximizing economic opportunity and protecting lives and property. Moving on to slide 8, just to touch on a few other of the initiatives that we're requesting support for in the FY17 budget. And I'm just going to touch on the ones that are highlighted in blue on this list. Congress in the FY16 omnibus budget established something called the National Ocean and Coastal Security Fund, stated set of purposes laid out in the language of the 16 bill we support. And we believe that the additional funding that we've requested here to initially capitalize that fund will be very valuable to our partners out in the states who are facing these issues that we've been talking about. So the purposes outlined will be as in the 16 bill, and if the funds are appropriated, we will work for the deployment of this fund hand in glove with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and other partners that set annual priorities within this context. So it's an important step forward for our oceans and coastal zones that we look forward to moving on. Second item I want to touch on is the $15 million increase requested for our regional coastal resilience grants. You may recall that in FY15, the Congress appropriated $10 million under this heading, and we received 176 proposals, 176 proposals, excuse me, that were asked for a total of $270 million. So the demand for this kind of technical support and information scientific support is clearly, clearly huge. We were able to meet only $10 million out of that multi-hundred million dollar level of demand. So we are requesting here to bump that figure up to a total of $25 million to take a larger step towards meeting the needs of our communities. So $151 million requested, $10 million available. We've got to do more than that in terms of supporting our communities in meeting their needs. And I touched on the water prediction initiative. I just want to highlight here the point I made before. This is a multi-line office initiative. There's a key element in the National Ocean Service and a key element in the National Weather Service. They are like two well-fitted pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. It's not redundancy or overlap. And we really need both of those pieces to achieve the advance that I showed in the map on the earlier slide. Moving on to slide nine, for those of you interested in fisheries, you know that the Secretary of Commerce has the prerogative to declare disasters when commercial fisheries have been impacted to some set degrees. The challenge, if you're one of those affected communities, is that that declaration has not tapped into a standing fund. And so providing funding to actually deliver some assistance to the affected communities has required the delay of a reprogramming or even of a full appropriation cycle. We're proposing in the FY17 budget to move in the direction that the country uses for wildfire, for FEMA-declared emergencies, and establish a standing fund, a fisheries disaster assistance fund, to fund it at in 17, $9 million a year, and we would propose to see a regular annual appropriation. The $9 million figure comes from an average over a number of years of common or typical outlays for disasters, so it's a sensible number to start with and would put us on a track to be able to deal with disasters in a speedier fashion and get support to the affected communities without those reprogramming appropriations delays. For NIMS, we're requesting $19.9 million to increase our consultation capacity. Projects, development projects, construction projects of many types that might affect either protected species, endangered or threatened species, essential fish habitat, all must come through NOAA for a consultation before they can be cleared by the granting agency and move forward. Our demand for consultations has risen substantially over the last years. It's gone up times 2.3 between 2012 and 2014. And our backlog has grown accordingly because we've not been able to grow our technical capacity to conduct these consultations. At the end of FY15, for example, we had a backlog of almost 1,200 endangered species consultations. That compares to under 400 in FY13, so a times three growth in just a few years. We desperately need some added capacity. Most of this backlog is concentrated in our southeast region, southern mid-Atlantic states around into the Gulf, and that area is going to see another jump in the volume of consultations requested as the Deepwater Horizon and Restore Act funding moves into play to try to remediate the damage done by that oil spill. So it is a big ask, and we understand the challenge of getting support for federal manpower, scientific manpower at this stage of the game, but this is a capacity that really needs to grow so that valid and worthwhile projects that are well-designed can move forward in a timely fashion. The final one on this page, on page nine, I'd like to speak about is management of fair trade and IUU fishing, again, an increase in the National Marine Fisheries Service. The United States has truly become a leader in sustainable fisheries management. And over the past couple of years, we've taken a number of steps to promote sustainable practices worldwide. Most notably, the Congress recently passed the Port State Measures Act. It's been enacted and implementing legislation passed. That will go a very long way to helping staunch the flow of illegal or reported black market fish product into the United States. And other measures are in process that will also help ensure the American consumer knows what seafood they're getting, that it is what is represented. It's not fraudulent by being a lower-valued species or otherwise mislabeled. I had the privilege of chairing the Presidential Task Force with Undersecretary Kathy Novelli from the Department of State that laid out the recommendations for action to the President that will back up the Port States Measure Act and really make sure that we move forward on both these fronts, seafood traceability, seafood fraud, illegal unreported fishing. But we need to also bolster that or back that up with the scale of enforcement capacity needed to ensure that the measures that are put in place administratively really have the kind of effect needed on the ground, out at the docks and out at our ports and harbors. So this $1.6 million increase would provide that extra enforcement capacity. Shifting to our second priority, evolve the National Weather Service. Many of you have heard from Louis Uccellini. This is a multi-pronged initiative that has dimensions of technology, of high-performance computing, of governance, of workflow, business process redesign, and of training and skills development. And we're in the we're executing the third year of that game plan now. You see in the blue boxes the key milestones in 14 and 15 that have been accomplished, the ones that are teed up and Louis and his team are working on right now in FY16. And I want to touch just a bit on what the focal points of the biggest focal points in the Evolve initiative will be for FY17. And on the next slide, you'll see what the core elements, the highlighted elements for FY17 are. A strong focus in FY17 will be on sustaining our current and critical in-situ observing systems, our NEXRAD Doppler radar network and our automated surface observing stations. NEXRAD was a $1.3-ish billion investment back in the 90s. And with a comparatively modest number of millions of dollars invested now, the goal is to extend the service life of that system for another 15 years. This is an eight-year plan. It touches on electronics, software, the actual pedestal on which the rotating antennas sit, the housing in which they operate. All of those elements need to be extended and refurbished to carry out this next 15 years' worth of operation. So this is both a cost-efficient thing to do in terms of a still viable and valuable system. It's also a sensible thing to do because there is not on the horizon or at hand any kind of radar development that could replace it at this stage of the game. NEXRAD is indispensable to severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings. About 85% of severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings depend critically on the NEXRAD Doppler signatures, as we all see with increasing frequency on our television news broadcasts. The ASOS service life extension is a similar story, multiple hundreds of millions of dollars deployed back in the 90s to provide the temperature, visibility, cloud base, and other parameters that are invaluable to the weather forecast itself, but also absolutely critical to the safety of aviation operations. Next time you're on a jetliner taxiing out somewhere, keep an eye out the window. You'll undoubtedly see an array of equipment like the one shown on the right somewhere as you taxi out. I'm a pilot myself. You can dial into these rigs and get the direct on-the-ground information from airports and every general aviation and commercial and military pilot flying over our territory does that on a routine basis. Unless we continue the service life extension that's underway now for ASOS, the system will begin to degrade very badly starting in just 2 years. We can't allow that kind of compromise to the safety and the efficiency of our aviation system. So those are the two biggest elements that the Weather Service, two of the big elements Weather Service will be focused on in FY17 and the two for which we need some additional funding. Slide 12 simply provides you the numbers for each of those asks and several other model and forecasting related upgrades that we'll be working on in FY17 as well. Slide 13 shifts to our third mission priority to invest in observational infrastructure. As I said at the outset, there is no such thing as environmental intelligence or useful forecast. There's no capability to provide a forecast or to make the kinds of assessments we do for fish stocks or for the climate without sustained real-time in-situ and space-based observations. Some of these systems are large. They often have sizable price tags. So sustaining support for them and momentum on the progress is difficult to do but it is really quite critical that we do that. The successful launches of Discover and JSON 3 last year, and the upcoming launch of GOES-R coming October and JPSS 1 early next year are major milestones to ensuring the continuity of the space-based element of our observing infrastructure. I emphasize at this point both the GOES-R program and the JPSS 1 program are on track. They are on time and on budget. They're executing well. They've been holding budget and schedule margin quite well, exception of we did do a replan on GOES-R over the last year, but they are both executing soundly and very well at this point and have been for the last 36 months. So what are the focal points in FY17 with respect to observational infrastructure? You see the list of key items under that heading on slide 14. I just want to talk briefly about two of those. First is another increment requested to begin the recapitalization of the NOAA fleet. I know many of you appreciate how urgently we need to do this at NOAA. We currently operate a fleet of 16 vessels, but half of those will go offline between now and 2028 if we don't begin moving out on recapitalizing. Ships don't pop up overnight. It's a long design and build process, so it is really quite imperative that we get started. Our fleet analysis shows clearly that we will need both ocean and regional class vessels over this time frame, and we're proposing with the 17 budget a minor change in course in terms of how we go forward on recapitalization to begin that with a regional class vessel rather than an ocean class vessel. This comes from a careful look across a total federal government fleet needs and a sharpened look at NOAA's own timing of needs as well as the realities of budget pressures and operating costs. So minor change of direction, but something that can build on the support for this request that the Congress provided in the 16 budget and really get us moving forward. So big step that's very important to get underway. Second item I want to touch on here is the polar follow-on. Again, with respect to our polar orbiting weather satellites, the ones that measure vertical profiles of temperature and moisture, that's the raw input that powers modern-day weather models. The state of the atmosphere is what you critically have to know. We got very strong support from the Congress in the FY16 omnibus to begin this polar follow-on program. We'll design and procure the next two satellites for the polar orbit after JPSS 1 and 2. And we moved out very quickly with those funds to lock down the contracts needed to ensure we could gain some cost efficiencies on the critical instruments that will populate those spacecraft. The requested funding here, $23 million, is in keeping with the planned profile of the polar follow-on program that we defined to the Congress and worked on with many of you over the past years. So two big items there. Let me touch briefly now on organizational excellence. This is a second area where there's a new dimension that we're proposing to move out on with this budget. I want to highlight that one in particular. It's shown on slide 15, accelerating research to operations. In the budget, you'll see this referred to as RTAP, the Research Transition Acceleration program. Tongue twister there. And the need for this is illustrated by the two map squares at the center and right of the chart. The lower right-hand one shows the ground resolution of our weather models up until very, very recently. And the HRRR square shows you the resolution we're now operating with in the National Weather Service. The punchline here, though, is that it took us 10 years to transition that higher resolution model into operation. We had research projects underway that had reached transitionable points, but essentially, in virtue of a lack of a programmatic structure and a lack of dedicated financial resources, those research advances were stranded in the laboratory for a very extended period of time. Better service was right around the corner for the American people, but languishing in the research labs for lack of this structure and the dedicated funding to make this transition. This is not a NOAA-unique issue. It's not a government-unique issue. It's a classic and common problem in businesses and industries of all size and all types. And experience proves, whether you're reading that experience in Government Business Executive or in the Harvard Business Review, experience proves that you need a dedicated structure, it takes conscious focus, and it takes some dedicated financial resources to harvest results from the laboratories, from the universities, and actually migrate them into practice. We're proposing in the FY17 budget to establish a budget line for that purpose and to fund it at the $10 million level. Our chief scientist, Rick Spinrad, over the last year and a half, has done all of the essential internal work needed to give that a sound set of standards and practices and philosophies. He drew substantially on experience and proven practices in the Navy, in DARPA, in the private sector. So we now have the right organizational structure and mechanisms inside of NOAA. It's time now to add the budgetary piece that will actually let this execute and enable us to make sure that the American public are getting real dividends from their investments in research much faster than they've been able to get them so far. On slide 16, one other critical investment for us in organizational excellence is to begin the replacement of our Mukilteo Fisheries Laboratory out on Puget Sound. You see the overhead view in the upper left here showing its location north of Seattle on the shore of Puget Sound. The dotted line that sticks out into the water area shows you where the fresh seawater intake for this laboratory is. This is one of the critical and unique characteristics of the Mukilteo site, in particular for the genetics the genetics and the aquaculture work that they're doing. That seawater supply is invaluable. It's the driving reason that we can't move this work readily to any of our other footprint in the Seattle area. The picture on the upper right shows you what the building currently looks like in the understory. It's an old World War II building, and the red and silver cylinders that you see there are hydraulic jacks that have been installed between the foundation stones and the floor beam to prevent the building from quite literally falling off its foundations and crumbling. That temporary fix was put into place in 2015 and has an engineering certification that only runs to 2020. So it is quite imperative that we move out now and get this facility replaced and restored. You can see in the lower left-hand corner, this is actually the walls ripping apart because of the subsidence and settling that's happened as the foundation has shifted and begun to fail. Slide 17. Summarizes our organizational excellence asks. I've talked about the first two. I just want to touch briefly on the other two that are highlighted here. The data systems for Mission Resilience will equip us to move out on key cyber vulnerabilities, principally in NESDIS, our satellite service. These are the systems that command and control our satellites. They are the pipes that bring the data down. But because of the pervasive use of satellite data across all of NOAA and with many outside customers, these systems also have many, many touch points to the rest of NOAA, to the National Weather Service's key systems, for example, as well as out to the outside world. You all know the kinds of challenges that the country faces and that NOAA has faced in the cybersecurity arena over the last several years. This request is oriented towards making sure we can really move out and nail down and remediate and remove some of our most specific vulnerabilities. And finally, building capacity in NOAA-wide for mission support. Mission support functions, or sometimes are called the back-of-house functions, they're always the things that are difficult to maintain the right level of support for. These are the largely invisible functions that those of you who just benefit from our services or our products hardly need to think about and virtually never see, but they are indispensable to ensuring that the agency can give you those products and services and our commitments to you and our obligations to you. Our support in these functions has gotten dangerously thin over the last several years. Let me highlight that with some statistics from our HR, our workforce management function. We're right now struggling with an average vacancy rate of 7%. That's at least twice as high as it's healthy for any organization to be. We have currently 1,800 empty slots throughout the organization right now, and a backlog of vacancies that is unsustainably high. The backlog affects, in particular, the National Weather Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service. The biggest numbers are there. We've been working very hard over the last couple years, really with the charge being led by Vice Admiral Devaney, our Deputy Inspector for Operations. We've been working very, very diligently over the last couple years to do everything we possibly can within existing resources to tackle this problem and to knock down the backlog. We've shopped out pieces of the work. We've brought external folks in to do critical analyses of our functions. We've been working hand in glove with the department level team on designing a shared services support model that in the long run will deliver better performance and better cost efficiency to all of these functions across the department. But we have to get from point A to point B on that shared services model. And NOAA, frankly, is not starting from a position of strength in that transition, in particular when it comes to the human resources function. So we are, again, as we have done in the last several years, asking the Congress to bolster support for this really critical set of functions. I gave you our vacancy and other rates. Let me give you one other, a few other figures that will give you a sense of the scale of the issue. If you look at agencies that are in some meaningful ways comparable to NOAA, say NASA, NIST, Institute of Standards, U.S. Geological Survey, similar missions, sort of appropriately similar scales. In their HR offices, any single HR agent or executive is taking care of between 60 and 80 people in the workforce. At NOAA, that ratio is one HR specialist to 174 people. That is an untenable ratio. And the only way to drive that down is to be sure we modestly grow our capacity and that we have the resources to move to the shared services model and migrate the skills of our folks to the new model for the next couple of years. So it's a tough ask. Everyone likes to see a very high tooth-to-tail ratio, money on mission, very efficient and low-cost back-of-house functions in every possible way. We want to be that way, too. There is low-cost, and then there is dangerously thin and beginning to fail state. That is where mission support is at NOAA today. It is at the dangerously low and clearly starting to fail the agency. So I elaborate on that at some length because you all, your support and your recognition of this issue and support for it as you make your rounds to talk to your congressmen and senators will be an indispensable factor in any prospect that we have for success. And I would ask you to consider that as you do your visits and have your conversations over the next several months. I don't propose to talk through the final two pages. As I said, they are the summary information on the reductions that are proposed in the budget and the table of results year over year. So with that, let me stop here and turn it back over to Kieran.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Sullivan. At this time, we will take questions from those of you on the phone. If you could please clearly state your name, your affiliation, and if you are directing your question to a particular individual, that would be great. So with that, operator, if you would provide the instructions to folks for asking questions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, at this time, to ask questions, please press star 1. One moment for questions.
Yeah, that's fine.
And our first question comes from Sean Smith. Your line is open.
Thank you. Sean Smith with ASTEC, the Association of Science Technology Centers. Thank you for the chance to listen to the presentation, Dr. Sullivan. Throughout the presentation, you highlighted NOAA's focus on making communities more resilient. I think you called it a priority and noted that the agency is working to ensure that communities and businesses, and I'm certain the public, have what they need to prepare for and prosper in a changing environment. Last year, the Environmental Literacy Grants Program, or the Competitive Education Grants Program, received $3 million in FY16 funding from Congress, despite being proposed for termination for a third straight fiscal year. And that program focused on community resilience to extreme weather events, other environmental hazards. Yet I see that it's once again zeroed out in the FY17 request. And I was just wondering if you could offer any insight on that decision. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. The zero in this budget is in no way a reflection on the quality or value of that program. Louisa Koch and her team in our education group do quite fabulous work. As you point out, the President's proposal going back several years has been to consolidate science education programs in Smithsonian and NASA and the National Science Foundation. This budget continues to reflect that intent, and we will see how the Congress responds to it.
Next question. Operator, we're ready for the next question whenever you are.
Thank you. The next question is from Brent Greenfield. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning. And this question is for Dr. Sullivan or any of your colleagues. I'm with the National Ocean Policy Coalition, which represents commercial and recreational interests in ensuring that the national ocean policy is implemented in a way that best benefits the national interest. And my question is about NOAA's participation in the national ocean policy and its Coastal and Marine Spatial Planning Initiative in particular. Our members depend on regulatory certainty and access to the nation's coastal and marine resources. So first, I was wondering if you or your colleagues could talk about where this initiative stands in terms of NOAA priorities. And also, with marine plans due out this year for a region spanning from Virginia to Maine, it's still unclear exactly how federal agencies, including NOAA, will implement the plans and their day-to-day activities and decision-making as required under the National Ocean Policy Executive Order. So if you or your colleagues could shed any light as to whether NOAA will be providing information on how it specifically intends to implement the marine plans and maps being developed, and will the public have an opportunity to review and comment on such guidance before these plans are finalized? Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. I'm going to let Chris Cartwright from our National Ocean Service speak to this also, but let me just say that we will have to see what the plans are to have an answer for you about how we would propose to implement them. So. They are in development. We hope we might see some drafts of them shortly, but it's premature for us to speculate on how implementation might happen of a plan we haven't seen.
Yes, thank you. Well, we definitely remain committed to regional approaches, including regional ocean partnerships, and we continue to work and support these groups as they develop their plans. We are expecting a couple of plans to come forward this year, and we're looking at those actively. And we're also supporting regional approaches along those lines through the Regional Coastal Resilience Grants Program that Dr. Sullivan talked about. So we definitely see, you know, regional as a focus going forward as an effective way to conduct change along the coast.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question comes from William Knuckles. Your line is open.
I think that the smart money likely is this year that there will be another continuing resolution. So I was wondering about with the reductions page, with the programs you have listed, how many of those are going to be achievable under a CR and how many of them are too directly connected to funding lines and sort of would frustrate your ability to reduce those programs?
Well, a continuing resolution is a continuing resolution, and we cannot start new or terminate programs under a continuing resolution. So this is the President's proposal for what we would do, and we will comply with the appropriations law as it comes forward, whether that's an enacted budget or a continuing resolution.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from DJ Cast. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody. My name is DJ Cast, and I was a teacher at C in 2015. I had an amazing time working with scientists on board the NOAA Henry Bigelow vessel, and I know you mentioned a few vessels earlier. My students loved it. Other educator colleagues that I've mentioned it to loved following my blog. and learning about what all these, you know, science research expeditions, how they work, and it was really inspiring for them. I've been watching a lot of the election this year. It's kind of terrifying for me. But I was trying to see what that would mean for Teacher at Sea funding and if I can recommend it to other colleagues.
Thank you for the wonderful words about Teacher at Sea, DJ. I've had some contact with a number of our Teacher at Sea participants and with the program folks, and it's a fabulous experience. And we're delighted with the alumni association we have. I'm not sure if your question was with respect to the Teacher at Sea program in the FY17 budget or with respect to the broader question of an upcoming presidential transition.
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Well, I have no wisdom on the second one for you. But I would say that, as I said to Sean's question earlier, this budget does continue the president's position and proposal to consolidate education programs, and so does not have funding in it for the Teacher at Sea program.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you have a question, please hit star one, and we're ready for the next question.
Yes, ma'am. One moment. The next question we have comes from John Bird. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning. Dr. Sullivan, my name is John Bird. I represent MAPS, the Association of Math and Geospatial Firms, as well as the National Society of Professional Surveyors. And one of the opportunities for our members deeply concerned for is the Digital Coast. And I was hoping you could maybe elaborate how the budget request for NOAA kind of connects to the sustainability and resilience themes as outlined earlier, but specifically through Digital Coast. But if you're able to elaborate, I'd appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John. I'll ask our NOS representatives to talk to that one.
Right. Thanks. This is Chris Cartwright. We have a couple of increases specifically targeted towards resilience within the Ocean Service, things like our capacity to respond to extreme events that's dealing with severe weather and change along the coast, and our ecosystem-based solutions for coastal resilience program. And both of those will be enhancing and adding to the data that's available in Digital Coast. We see that as an important tool and platform for communities, and we'll be looking to adding new products and services in there as a result of this budget request.
Great, thank you. Next question, please.
Yes, the next question comes from Amy Hammer. Your line is open.
Good morning. Dr. Sullivan, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the leadership you've been showing on the aquaculture program and your people both there in Washington and specifically out in California who are trying to help us chart through an uncharted territory in a regulatory process. I noted that on another matter, and the question is there, that on your document about the schedule and milestones that you had noted Prescott grants for the 2017 to 2021 period. Does that mean that Prescott grants will again be in the NOAA budget, at least for this year?
We don't expect any change to the Prescott grants in 2017. And I don't know if DJ Cast is still on the line, but let me reach back to that question about Teacher at Sea. I have a correction. I was speaking from memory and grabbed my FY16 memory instead of 17 memory. Teacher at Sea is funded in the 17 budget at $600,000.
Well, and with the no change, does that mean Prescott is funded in the budget this year?
Yes, it does.
Oh, thank you so much. It's very much appreciated by many.
Thank you very much. If anyone else has a question, just a reminder, star one. All right, hearing no additional questions, we'll go ahead and wrap up the call for today. I want to thank you all again for participating and joining us for the FY17 Constituent Budget Brief. As a reminder, you can find our budget materials on our website, which is NOAA.gov. You can also email us at external.affairs@NOAA.gov for more information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. All parties may disconnect.